Good morning. Thanks for coming out to sit today. Some of us have been studying the song of the trusting mind. Maybe the first Zen poem in this world by the third Chinese Zen ancestor. Quite well known in its time in China, and getting to be quite well known in America, I think, too. It's the poem that begins with, "The great way is not difficult for those who hold no preferences." The great way is without difficulty. Just avoid picking and choosing, is another translation. And it goes on from there, but that opening stanza is really the summary of this whole poem and the summary of our practice. We could look at it like this. And especially great instruction for a one-day sitting. Chances are highly likely that sometime today a preference might arise. Maybe even more than one. And then it will, at such a time, it seems that the way, the great way, the Tao, the free-flowing flow, becomes difficult as soon as we hold a preference. So, such a wonderful, simple instruction. Let go of our holding or grasping a preference of getting involved in picking and choosing, and the great way seems not so difficult. So moment to moment we can watch how this works very intimately through the day. Physically, we have physical preferences because it's physically hard to sit through a whole day. And we have mental preferences. So this, how to say, this poem was an early poem in Zen, and it kind of started spreading around old China. And this was like the 5th, 6th century in China. And it became like part of the Zen culture. This is like early Zen in China. It became kind of part of the culture, this poem. And people were talking about it. And I feel like it's somewhat similar situation in America now. Is this poem is, I think, pretty well known. When you start to get into Zen, you hear about this at some point. And you hear that phrase, and I think it's becoming part of the American Zen culture. We're creating American Zen culture, slowly. We've had about 50 years, maybe, so far. And things like, you know, why did Bodhidharma come from the West became a kind of standard part of the Zen culture in old China. And I think in America we start hearing phrases like that, and which has numerous answers. And it's like in our new way of talking, we kind of know what that means. We get a sense, why did Bodhidharma come from the West? It's just a poetic way of saying, what's the point of all this anyway? So so this is, then later in Zen, people started gathering together all these Zen stories, koan collections, and so we have the Blue Cliff Record, 100 stories. And there's a handful of stories in here, actually 4 different koans in the Blue Cliff Record that are all quoting this first line of the Song of the Trusting Mind. So it's a similar thing. It's like people were talking about that, and like, this does seem like the essence of the teaching, but how do we actually practice with this? The great way is without difficulty for those who hold no preferences. So, Zhao Zhou is one of the great golden age Zen teachers in China, who was, I think he lived about 300 years, 200 or 300 years after the Song of the Trusting Mind was written, after the time of the third ancestor. But in those couple hundred years, this poem was circulating around, so people would come to Zhao Zhou and ask him about how to practice this holding no preferences. And I thought we can just look at one of these stories today. I'll just read you there's three in a row here. Cases 57, 58, 59 are all, I don't know if it's the same monk or different monks, asking Zhao Zhou about this point about the great way being not difficult. So, case 59 is a monk asked Zhao Zhou, the great way is without difficulty for those who hold no preferences. He quotes, and then he says, as soon as there are words spoken, this is discrimination. How do you help people, teacher? You're a teacher who teaches in words, but as soon as words are spoken, there's discrimination, or there's picking and choosing. It's the same word. There's preference. There's holding preference. As soon as words are spoken, this is holding a preference. How do you help people, teacher? And Zhao Zhou says, why not quote that saying fully? That saying from the poem? Why don't you quote it fully? And the monk said, I only remember that much of it. And Zhao Zhou said, it goes like this. The great way is without difficulty for those who hold no preferences. That's what the monk said, right? So the monk got caught up actually, I only remember that one stanza. And I just say, okay, it's like this. And he just repeats the stanza. Something to do with picking and choosing and preferences for how many stanzas are going to be recited, and for I wish I could remember more, or I'm so sorry that I only know that much. So he's playing with that. We could talk about that story for a while, but let's forget it and go on to the next one. Because, you know, don't want to hold any particular preferences. Another time, a monk asked Zhao Zhou, he said, the great way is without difficulty for those who hold no preferences. Isn't this a cliche for people these days? Just like it might be for us. We hear that, we can hear that a lot. We're like, I hear it so much. Isn't this just that people hear that, and isn't it just like a cliche now? And Zhao Zhou said, once someone asked me about this, and I simply couldn't give an explanation for 5 years. That's another story. Which we might take to be pointing towards. A cliche is like something you hear over and over again, so it loses its meaning. It's like, oh yeah, the great way is not difficult for those who hold no preferences. Yeah, 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 we know it. It's so simple. It's kind of like a cliche. But Zhao Zhou said, well, once somebody asked me about this, and I actually couldn't answer. I couldn't really explain the profundity of this teaching for 5 years. So therefore, you know, and during that time, it was not a cliche for me, we might say. So here's case 57. Another time, a monk came to Zhao Zhou and said, the great way is without difficulty for those who hold no preferences. Well, what is holding no preferences? This is a question, right? What is it to hold no preferences? What is it to not pick and choose? What is non-discrimination? And Zhao Zhou said, in the heavens and on the earth, I alone and the world honored one. Which is quoting Shakyamuni Buddha. When he was born, according to the sutras, he popped out of his mother's side, he walked 7 steps, and he pointed up to the heavens and the earth and said, in the heavens above, everywhere, in throughout space, and on the earth below, everywhere, grounded here that we can see, everywhere. I alone am the world honored one. Ken and Yaro and I just visited Lumbini, where Buddha was born, and it's on the Nepal-Indian border, and all over that town there's these statues of the Buddha, baby Buddha, like going like this, in all different styles, some huge ones, huge baby Buddhas, very cute little baby Buddhas. Huge, you know, stalls selling little baby Buddhas. Baby Buddhas everywhere in that town. We have some photos of, like, the group of our pilgrims walking around like this. So, various Zen teachers bring this up and, you know, what about this? For one thing, what about a newborn baby speaking? But aside from that, what about I alone am the world honored one? alone is a nice word in English because it's made up of, if you break it apart, it's all one. All own. In the heavens above and on the earth below, I, all one, and the world honored one. So, is this a like utterly narcissistic, egotistical statement? Or is he saying, I, what we mean by I here is big, big, big I, all one, the I that is all one. And the greatest being in the universe, because I include all of us. So anybody potentially could make such a statement. I, one with everything, am supreme. We could even say the oneness of everything is the greatest ever. Right? Well, we can express it, the oneness as, you know, expressed through my little baby body walking on the earth is the world honored one, the noblest. So, back to the story here. Again, the monk asked Zhao Zhou if the great way is without difficulty for those who hold no preferences. What is holding no preferences? And Zhao Zhou said, in the heavens and on earth, I alone am the world honored one. The monk said, well, that's still discrimination. And Zhao Zhou said, stupid oaf! Where's the discrimination? The monk said nothing. These Zen people had a lot of fun with these kind of stories. So I think this is a great practice instruction. What is holding no preferences? What is non-discrimination? What is not picking and choosing? I alone am the world honored one. You could say that's the ultimate, sounds at first like the ultimate picking and choosing. The ultimate preference. I alone, forget about you all. I am the world honored one. This is holding a preference for me alone. But then, you know, when we look at this more closely, and so the monk said, this is still discrimination. And Jiaozhou said, stupid oaf, where is the discrimination in such a all-encompassing statement? I, all, un, and the world honored one. Where is the discrimination? It's words, right? It's using words, but it's this all-inclusive statement where nothing's missing. No picking and choosing, no preference there. And it's kind of interesting that Jiaozhou says, you stupid oaf, because this sounds like a big discriminatory statement, right? And it sounds like, I alone am the world honored one, and you're a stupid oaf, right? Sounds like the ultimate discrimination, picking and choosing, holding a preference for my clear view over your stupid view. So this is part of the beauty of this too, I think, and the challenge to hear. We could even hear, not just, you stupid oaf, where's the discrimination in my statement, but you stupid oaf, where's the discrimination in saying you stupid oaf? That's a little harder maybe, but still, these are the words that come out of Jiaozhou's mouth. You stupid oaf, or you country bumpkin, is another translation. You bumpkin. And, you know, maybe he said this kind of endearingly. I think he didn't say it with great anger. You stupid idiot.
And crooked cucumber.
Crooked cucumber, yeah. Suzuki Roshi's teacher called him, you crooked cucumber. I think quite lovingly. Crooked cucumber. Country bumpkin. Where is the picking and choosing here? What is picking and choosing? What is holding preference? What is discrimination? And it's, you know, very much wrapped up in words and language and conceptual thought. Which is why one of these stories was really mentioning this point clearly about words, right? As soon as there are words spoken, this is holding preference, this is picking and choosing, the monk said. And then Jiaozhou said, why don't you quote the poem fully? Like, let's get into, we're still getting into words here. Quote these words fully. You only did a little bit of words. So, is there a way to use words freely, playfully, without grasping them as like, these words are the truth, your words are false. Or words that come to us, right? Sticks and stones may break my bones, but words can never hurt me. But actually, I think we're most hurt by words. Because we grasp some essence in the words. If somebody says, you country bumpkin, you stupid oaf, it wounds us. Because we hold some essence in the words. And we project the other person's feeling about us onto them through their words. So it's all very complicated. Human relationships, using words. A lot of relationships is about words. And even if it's not words, it's still complicated. because we're holding this or that. Not picking and choosing. I looked up the Chinese characters, and it does mean something literally. Like, it's two different characters, and each of them mean like pick or choose. So picking and choosing is maybe a kind of literal translation, and holding no preferences, I think, points to the same meaning. And here it actually says non-discrimination. Interestingly, in the Chinese characters in the poem, it actually says the great way, without difficulty, just hate. This is character that means like despise or hate picking and choosing. Isn't that interesting? I thought, was there some like kind of like a little almost subtle humor in there? In the original poem, it's you know, there's no problem in this great way, but you really have to totally avoid and hate and detest picking and choosing. You have to have this strong preference against picking and choosing.
Just don't pick
picking and choosing. Exactly. So, was that intentional? Maybe. Yeah, kind of like, well, how do you do this?
One way I keep thinking of that favorite koan of mine is when one of the teachers was asked, what's the most important thing you've learned? And his answer was an appropriate response that doesn't have to be words at all. It just has to be what comes out of the way forth to respond to this situation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It doesn't have to be verbal at all. It has nothing to do with preferences. It's what comes naturally forth to respond to whatever is coming up.
Naturally forth.
Yes.
Yeah. Because we can also, somebody asks a question, and then we can try to like run through our variety of responses, and like, I think I'll pick this one.
Yeah, exactly. So, holistically and completely.
Yeah. In relationship.
Yes.
Like the response comes forth from the other person and the situation and oneself.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, it comes forth dependent on mm-hmm. all these different conditions, mm-hmm. not just on my preference. The response comes forth to you, dependent on you and me and our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And then a response to another person, maybe it will be somewhat different because
yes.
the conditions are different. It's a different person with a different relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no stock answers, and that's what we call appropriate response.
Mm-hmm.
So the dependently arisen
mm-hmm.
response, the response that dependently arises from myriad conditions seen and unseen, because as you said, natural,
mm-hmm.
I mean like beyond even why we know we even responded that way. Well, that was the response, like, stupid oaf. And then Jiao might say, wow, I didn't expect to say that. That sounds kind of rude. I hope he doesn't mind. The monk said nothing, actually. But that was what came forth. And if we trust Jiao Jiu is this great, appropriately responding teacher, that's just his relationship with that particular monk in that situation, you know, and thinking of baby Buddha and all of that was like produced stupid oaf, or however they say it in Chinese, country bumpkin.
Yeah, because we don't know their relationship.
Yeah, we don't know. Yeah, but I think we know there is a relationship. And so you can say all these stories that sometimes seem quite unusual. That seems so painful. But if we maybe know their relationship, we know that it was more playful than painful.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I was thinking of your comment in the Dharma talk a week or so ago about kindness in koans.
Mm.
And I think it's good just to assume it's always kind.
Ah.
So if you're saying that, you know, maybe in that split
Yeah.
Sliced in this moment.
Yeah.
So I thought it, particularly cognitively, but it just all came together. He's ready for being both stupid of.
Yeah.
So he could, like, drop out.
Yeah. Yeah.
So he would only have done that if he was in that moment really assessing the monk is right.
Yeah, I think so.
These two words.
Yeah.
So they're always kind, even when they.
Yeah. That's what I think the best way to understand this, you know, spiritual bodhisattva literature of Zen called koans is that's why they get recorded. It's because they're benefiting beings. So we might argue, I mean, there's stories about killing cats and all kinds of radical stuff. But yeah, just take them in the spirit. And stupid oaf, and then immediately, not just stupid oaf, but stupid oaf, where's the discrimination right now? Stupid oaf, he called me, where's the discrimination? Oh, I'm like caught up in layers of discrimination.
Okay, I'm a stupid oaf.
Yeah, 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 I'm like the radiant, brightness of stupid oaf. These words are like written in gold across the heavens, enlightening me to the oneness of all things. Stupid oaf. Beyond all discrimination. Yeah. Here we have this is commentaries on these stories by Hakuin in the 16th, 17th century, and it was a great reviver of the Rinzai Zen school, and Tenge Densong, who is a great contemporary teacher of Hakuin in the Soto Zen school. So Thomas Cleary put together these kind of two side by side. It gets different flavors for how they comment on these stories. The Hakuin says about in the heavens and on earth, only I alone am the world honored one. Hakuin says, there's no explanation for this. Is this discrimination? Is this non-discrimination? East, west, south, north, a single mass of iron. All the teachings of Buddha's whole lifetime, which is, I think, the phrase from what is the teaching, all the teachings of Buddha's whole lifetime, an appropriate response. Yeah. I think he's actually quoting that. The teachings of the Buddha's whole lifetime and the essential issues of all the Zen ancestors are all included in this one statement. I alone am the world honored one. The monk says, this is still discrimination. Hakuin says, he thinks so because he takes the I of only I to mean the personal self, the self contrasted to others. Stupid oaf. Hakuin says, Jiaozhe was unable to restrain his indignation, so one of his usual great sayings didn't come out. Even so, this is very scary. He says, Hakuin says, the stupid oaf is very scary. And Tenke Densong, the Soto teacher, says, the words, I alone am the world honored one, are an iron stake. As a matter of fact, this is also your own treasure, you know. Every individual, each one, is also the world honored one, no other. There's no discrimination at all. And on stupid oaf, Tenke says, he uses a wedge to remove a wedge. How so? This monk thought discrimination is a bad thing, so he felt it must be better to avoid discrimination by all means. Where is the discrimination? What is it? Using a wedge to remove a wedge is Jiaozhou's method of revival. It's a great, comes up in these koan literature quite a bit. Using a wedge to remove a wedge, like when you're chopping down a tree, right? So you start that big cut in the tree there, and then you hammer an iron wedge into the cut of the tree. But then the wedge gets stuck in the tree, and then you put another wedge in further down in order to get that wedge out. And then maybe you need another wedge to get that wedge out. So if we get stuck in words, the wedge of words gets stuck, then we use more wedge words to unstick.
There's an inherent meaning of the tree.
Leaning?
Why you use the wedge in the first place. Because the tree is leaning, but your saw will get stuck. The point of all the wedges is because you're sawing. You don't want your saw to get stuck.
Oh, I mean, it starts leaning into the cut.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So you have to put a wedge in so that your saw doesn't get bound up.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you have a wedge.
Yeah. Interesting. So when we're sawing through with prajna paramita saw, sometimes the whole situation starts squeezing this perfect wisdom saw because relationships are complicated.
Also reminds me of the story of the monk, of maybe it's a samurai or something that a monk calls in names or whatever, because it's samurai's asking questions about, you know, I can't remember the question, but something about, you know, what is heaven and
hell. Oh, yeah.
And he starts insulting him, the monk starts insulting him. Mm. Samurai's about to kill him, and then he says, that's hell.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he...
His mind
kind of stops and he goes, and that's heaven.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, I get it. Thank you for your teaching. I put down the sword. That's heaven. Yeah. Beautiful story. Mm-hmm. Yes, Rich.
It seems like in my practice, I keep returning to trying to let go of the preference for the great way to be easy. So I could say the great way is not difficult for one who doesn't prefer it to be easy.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's a starting place.
Mm-hmm.
Because all the other preferences are still there.
Yeah.
But then I can let go of getting sorry for myself for everything being so hard.
Yeah, difficult and easy is a big discrimination, and we usually have preferences for the easy. It's interesting that, you know, the poem doesn't say the great way is easy. It just says it's not difficult. It's safer to say what something isn't than what it is.
Especially if it's known.
Yes.
There's another reference to the difficult and the easy in the poem that is...
Later in the poem.
It's a contradiction to the original statement.
How so?
I have to take another look, but they seem to have, there's tension there between the two.
Yeah. Difficult and easy is an interesting one to play with, especially, again, in a one-day sitting. Yeah. Like, we might have a period, even after many periods, we might be sitting just totally at ease, like, wow, this is like the perfect place to be. There's nothing I have to do this whole day. It's like my life is so complicated, it's so easy. And we might feel the very next minute, there is nothing as difficult as sitting without moving all day.
I can't stand it one more second.
Yeah, it's the supreme difficulty. So, and it's all around holding preferences. And as I mentioned before, I can't remember if I came up with that way of translating it, holding no preferences. But sometimes it says have no preferences. And I thought that seems too strong to me because, I mean, this is a debate we could have, but for one who realizes the great way, do they really literally have no preferences? I think we maybe would have to discuss what preference means. Or is it they have, like, it's natural to prefer this over that, where, like, it's a biological thing even, right? It's like, if you're offered, a bowl of chocolate cookies and a bowl of mud or, dried crap, it's like, do you have a preference? I mean, did even Shakyamuni Buddha, would he say, no, I don't care, I'll take the crap? I think he probably, if everything else is equal and nobody minds either way, I'll take the cookies. So I think that's, I don't even know if a Buddha would like really have no discrimination or preference between those, but they maybe really don't hold the preference. So they say, well, you can't have the cookies, okay? Then the Buddha's like, okay, I hope to have something to eat sometime in the next week, or I'm going to get very weak. But it's okay. I don't need these particular cookies right now. And, eating the crap, maybe, if it's sterile. There are, as you may know, there in tantric Vajrayana Buddhism and Hinduism, there are such practices of radical non-discrimination, the things that are totally taboo and that everybody's averse to, even down to like eating crap. As like as a practice, one starts taking on the sort of the opposite of one's preferences, just to play with not holding preferences. It's kind of advanced practice, maybe. So we'll have tea this afternoon for those staying. We can discuss this more after several more periods of watching how the mind holds preferences and lets them go. It's just an instant turn, any moment. It's the definition. And this is the Four Noble Truths, right? This is like a Zen version of the Four Noble Truths, which is there's suffering. Suffering is arises. The origin of suffering is craving, or we could call holding preferences,
picking and choosing.
And the cessation of suffering is the cessation of that very craving, is not holding the preferences, and that's nirvana, the great way without difficulty. So this is just the Zen way of talking about the same thing. So simple, but so, I won't say difficult. That would be picking and choosing. It's so easy. No, that's too flippant. It's not easy or difficult. The verse, Shui Do's verse to celebrate this story, deep as an ocean, steady as a mountain, celebrating Jiao Zhou. A mosquito sports in a wind storm gale. This maybe like the monk is this tiny mosquito getting blown around by Jiao Zhou's saying, where is the discrimination? Deep as an ocean, steady as a mountain, a mosquito sports in a gale, an ant tries to shake an iron pillar. Discrimination, discrimination, picking and choosing, holding preference. A cloth drum under the eaves. A cloth drum is like when you hit it. Was this a mistake to come here today and do this sitting? Is it a mistake to try to escape it? Are we free to come and go, to stay? May any soap suds arisen from this bubble bath float to the farthest reaches of vast space, adorning the Buddha's topknot. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's ways unsurpassable. I vow to become it.